Welcome to Relatable. This is your host, Teresa Freeman. I have wanted to speak with our guest, Mr. Hadley Harrison, for a long time. Hadley is an extraordinary fourth grade teacher and high school wrestling coach. What makes Mr. Harrison extraordinary is his positivity, enthusiasm, and unwavering support for his students and athletes. In this episode, Hadley provides a glimpse into his background and how he found his way to be a teacher and a coach. He's genuine, funny, and talks candidly about how hard work and dedication can make anything happen. Enjoy this episode. Hi, Hadley.
Hi, Teresa.
Thank you so much for meeting with me today.
Absolutely.
I'm very excited to talk with you. And before we even get into the interview, I'm going to totally embarrass you.
That's all right. So
we know each other because you have taught two of my kids, and I actually have three boys, and you've coached the other one. So really, you've interacted with all my kids. And I've told you this after my oldest left your class. I don't know if you remember this, but my oldest really, I would not say struggled academically. I think he had a hard time figuring out his place. Like, when all the smart people left in second grade, I think he felt very much like, well, then I must be a loser, right? Because I didn't leave, which I think is something that I struggle with, how that happens, and kids sort of start to identify already at that time, like they're the smart people, and so I don't get to be smart.
Right.
But for my son, who is super active and energetic and charismatic and is like a great like relationship kid, but I think sitting still, being focused, and for academics, he struggled. And I think seeing you as a leader in that classroom and being able to frankly see someone like him in a position in academia was life-changing for him, for sure. And I think really changed the way that he participated in school and in class. And to this day, I think would tell you like you were one of the most impactful teachers. So thank you for that. But also hopefully you can like take that in. And then you got my second son, who's totally different. He's like very different. But similarly, I think just a connection to a male teacher and being able to feel, I think especially for boys, that they can kind of be boys but still be in an environment where they're really active in learning. So you're super passionate and energetic. And why I want to talk to you today, there's so many things. I think I could probably talk to you for 2 hours, but I'd love to know a little bit about your background, but also how you are so inspired, how you're so motivated, and what are some of the things that you do that kind of help you kind of stay in that space. So the first thing I want to talk about is the energy thing, right? So you are so, you have so much energy. You do. It's like, that is totally normal. But you're like such a positive force and so much energy. So tell me a little bit about that and where that comes from. And has that always been the case? Have you always been like that?
Yeah, I would definitely say the energy part, and just like having a lot of like movement and, you know, a little bit about background I have.
Yeah.
You know, I come from, I'm the youngest of six. There's six kids in our family. You know, we're all unique in those the ways that we are, but you know, I've always had, I was born at 12:59 a.m., so I was a morning baby, so I've always been a morning person. That's part of a little bit, I like getting up in the morning, I like, you know, start my day off on the right foot. But when it comes to the teaching, when it comes to in the classroom and what I do, I really actually get the energy from the kids. I feel like if I'm not energetic, if I'm not, you know, having that enthusiasm, that zest, that, you know, the kids are going to feed off whatever, you know, who I am. Like, so if I don't have that energy and I don't bring that passion in, then the kids fall asleep or they're not interested in. So, you know, when I see the kids excited, when I see the kids, you know, really into something or like, wow, Ms. Harris, this is great, but, you know, that just keeps me going for what, you know, that I'm doing. But definitely have always had a lot of energy. I'm not sure if that's from the sports. I did, you know, growing up, I played pretty much every sport that there was. I try to stay fit. I try to exercise a lot, and I try to keep, you know, always moving. So I think part of it with the energy is is that sports related, but at the same time, it's the reaction of the kids that keeps me going, that really allows me to stay enthusiastic, stay zestful, stay absolutely as much energy as I can into what I do for those kids.
Were you generally a positive kid? Like, if you think back, like, were you someone that was generally in a good mood?
Yeah, I would say I was always as positive as I could. I got along with everyone, really, in school. I got along with, the really popular kids, not so popular kids, the sportsy kids, the smart kids, the dork. Everyone across the board, pretty much. I just kind of was like kind of a keystone student, kind of keystone kid that, I was able to find a relationship with somebody, with everyone some way. And I think that's really has impacted or really has helped me as a teacher, that I'm able to connect to my students in the same way. So even as a kid, I had friends across the board. I didn't just hang out with one group of friends. I didn't just hang out with the athletic kids. I didn't just hang out with the kids, that liked art. I didn't hang out with the kids that were technology or, didn't do sports with the band. I hung out with everyone and I talked to everyone. I was able to, find something in common with them and be able to kind of, fit in anywhere. And I feel like later on now, as I get kids that, are athletic, like to draw, don't do sports, do sports, that, my upbringing and who I was as a kid, being able to have that interaction with all sorts of kids, like, I do that now with my students. I don't just build relationships with the ones that
are like you.
Like me.
Right.
I build relationships with, all the kids because I can have that connection with them. I can bring something that, oh, hey, I did that when I could. Oh, hey, here's something. And I try to find that connection. And that's that piece that the kids really kind of feed off of, and the kids that really, enjoy being in my classroom because they're like, oh, Ms. Harrison didn't do this. Oh, Ms. Harrison. And so I find that relationship, I find that connection with the kids, and, I just allow them to feed off.
Were you a good student yourself in high school and college?
It all depends on your definition of a good kid. It all depends on definition. I would say as far as academically, I did okay.
Yeah.
There were certain things that I was low, and I was I was special ed actually all the way up through eighth grade in reading specifically, mm-hmm. the literacy part. I struggled with reading, I struggled with writing, still really do today. And so I was always pulled out of class during those times from all the way from first grade up through about eighth grade that I, I struggled on the academic piece.
How did you deal with that? Do you remember what that felt like?
I tell you what, kind of going back, I remember the first time getting pulled in first grade, I would go every morning down, I would do like these sight words, and at first I felt a little embarrassed, like what was going on, but then I started realizing, like, well, yeah, I'm not the best reader, I'm not the best speller, I spell the simplest words the weirdest ways. So at first it kind of, I felt a little embarrassed about it, but ultimately, I started building relationships with teachers that would pull me and something, and I was like, they're here to help me, so, I'm okay with that.
Right.
But, behaviorally, was I a good kid? I don't know. I couldn't stop, couldn't sit still,
Right.
Some teachers, I'd get reprimanded or something like that. But for the most part, I was very fortunate and blessed to have pretty good teachers who had all of my siblings. I was the youngest.
Oh,
six.
Right.
They had Hayden. They had Hunter. They had Hayden.
And so, the H's.
Yeah. I never was called Hadley first off and be like, hey, Hayden. Hadley this time. They had my sibling coming up through, so they kind of had an idea of, I guess I won't say my behaviors, but like they knew our family well.
Were you in a small town?
Pretty small town, yeah. So there's 310 students in our 310 people in our town. I moved, now there's 309. No, so, it's pretty small.
Yeah.
McCain, Pennsylvania is a pretty small town, and, I like it that way, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then when you went to high school, what sports did you play?
In high school, I really focused on running and wrestling. So I did track, usually mid-distance, cross-country, longer distance, and then wrestling. And that really was actually across our whole family, other than the girls. The girls ran track and cross-country. They were good runners. And then my siblings, the four boys, Hunter, Hudson, Hayden, and myself, we focused on the wrestling part. But we all still participate in the fall, in the track, in the spring, in the track, and things like that.
And when you played in high school, was there a lot of competition to make that team, or was it just straightforward because you were so well known already? Like, was it a given, like, yeah, he's going to wrestle and he's going to be probably one of our top athletes?
Well, as far as, like, you know, we got into sports really young. I literally started wrestling when I was three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hunter and Hudson started at first. They were about five or six. And then naturally, you know, they're not going to leave me at home. They're going to bring me to practice. And
right.
Start rolling around. And there was a kid there, still good friends with, his name is Ashton Osberg. And he was my size, 1 year older than I was. And, you know, he was kind of my training partner ever since we were, you know, really young. And I really just fell in love with it. You know, the way that my father got us into it in a fun way. I guess we're always very competitive. I guess growing up a little bit in that bigger family, it's always that competition. You always, you know, wanted to beat your brother. You always wanted to beat your sister. You always wanted in any competition. So we had that natural competitive edge, I think, just growing up. I think that was instilled in us naturally.
Did your brothers, like, beat up on you?
Yeah, there was days that... I'm going to share this with them. There were days that they're like, Mom and Dad are gone. What are we going to do? I was like, let's go out and swim the pond. Let's go out ride by. Like, no, hey, let's hold Hadley down and
beat him.
Beat him up. Yeah. I'm like, no, let's come with the other option or something like that. So, no, we've definitely have had our wrestling matches in the kitchen that got thrown out to the backyard. There was definitely some, I won't say fighting, but there's definitely some tussles between the boys and stuff like that growing up. But.
Are you a tight family now? Like, is everybody super close? And
yeah, I mean, if you want to go the progression through our relationship, like, you know, looking back all through high school, the girls fought, the boys fought, you know, but I think that part of fighting, that part of, you know, interacting with each other really benefited in the long run. We have such good respect for each other. You know, there's not a week really or a few days that go by that I haven't talked to everyone in my family.
It's nice to have that.
Whether it's I call them in the morning or we're on a group chat with all, you know, all the four boys or all six kids. And so as far as staying close, we're very close. You know, even though Hayden's in the military, he's out in Oklahoma, you know, and pretty much the rest of the family's still up home in Pennsylvania, and I'm down here in Virginia, we're still very closely knitted and have a lot of respect for each other.
All right, so let's move to college. How did you pick where you wanted to go to school, and what was that process like in terms of applying and, you know, how did that work for you?
First off, I wanted to focus on wrestling. Wrestling was a huge part of my life. Whether it was, you know, I really liked it, I was good at it, what it taught me, and, you know, a lot of sacrifices, independence, you know, that work ethic. I wanted to continue that just because I just thoroughly enjoyed what wrestling has given me and has to offer, and I wanted to take it, continue to expand to the next level. One thing I had my eyes set on was wrestling Division I. At a university. My brother Hayden went NAIA. He took the path of being a pilot. My brother Hudson went Division II, and it was very successful, the route that he took. But I had really had my eyes focused on a Division I college, and I wanted to compete at that level. I looked at a couple universities that were looking at me. You know, I went to Pitt, I went to Edinburgh. Didn't really necessarily want to go to Penn State. I kind of liked growing up in a small town. I wanted to go to a smaller college. I didn't need to go to a 40,000 person college.
Right.
And so Clarion University contacted me. And then I kind of knew a little bit about the college, but then until I made the visit, I made the decision. It was small, about 6,500 students in Division I, and it was a very outdoorsy college. Like, I could step out the front door and go hunting. There's a river down the road that I can go fishing in. And it was a small town, but a good college that fit what I was looking for.
Is that in Pennsylvania?
It's in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's about an hour and a half, from where I live. So as far as locations, like, hey, I can go home if I need to, or I can stay. And it just was like a perfect fit all around. It had what I want for wrestling. It had what I wanted, you know, what I like personally with the outdoors and stuff. And it just, you know, really fit me very well. And it was, again, at that level that I wanted to go with.
And so you went there with the intent to wrestle, right? And, like, you were you like, did they scout you? Was that part of the process?
Yeah, I ended up getting a scholarship. So my first year that when they recruited me, I got a scholarship, and then I worked really hard and put a lot of extra work in, and I ended up doing pretty well my freshman year. And then after my freshman year, they ended up upping my scholarship to a full ride.
Wow.
And so wrestling had paid for my whole school.
That's amazing.
Pretty much after my first year.
So let's talk about the hard work piece of it, right? Because I think it's interesting. I have conversations with fellow parents all the time about how I think at least when I was growing up, there was less oversight from parents and less support. So kind of the scrappy survived, right? People that kind of knew what hard work was or what they had to do to get to whatever goal they wanted. And I feel like now... sometimes I struggle to see that, right? Yeah. There's just a lot of on-demand stuff that's happening, so people don't necessarily get what that hard work can get you. So for you, how did you, I think you talked a little bit about this, maybe it was through wrestling, but where did that work ethic come from? Is it like competing with all your siblings, right? Because you want to be, you want to stand out?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of aspects where the hard work has come from. I mean, I think it really derived when we were kids, you know, our upbringing and you know, we're a product of our environment, you know,
right.
Environment that, you know, we grew up in the small town, you know, some of the things that we did with baling hay, you know, for farmer, local farmer, we're going to hire the Harrison boys. They're going to go, you know, they'll work from dusk till dawn. They'll make sure the job gets done. And, you know, my father and mother, both were very inspirational to us as far as the exemplary model that they set for us.
Right.
And, you know, whenever there was a task, they didn't stop until it was completed. Whether it took, you know, a day, an hour, or a year, it just was something that they modeled for us. That you know, if it's you have a job to do, you don't stop until it's completed. So if you have to bale 500 bales of hay, you keep working until it's done. So starting from a young age, and what our parents, you know, we had to do as far as where we were living, you know, that work ethic was really instilled, and it transferred then into the sports, you know, and a lot of the sports that we did, that track, that cross country, and that wrestling, yes, it's a team sport. Yeah, you're on the team with kids and, you know, your friends and teammates, but ultimately, you're the only person out there wrestling.
Right.
You're the only person out there on that. It's on you. So your results clearly will reflect what you put into it. You know, you're out there running, you know, in a cross country meet. Yeah, you got your teammates with you, but you ultimately control your time. So if you want to, you know, how you finish. So the sports we did was that teamwork, that team ethic, but also, you know, it was a lot of, hey, what are you going to put into it in order to, you know, accomplish whatever goals that you set for yourself? So where did that work, hard work come from? You know, our parents, my mother, my father, you know, setting those examples, you know, putting us in situations that made us work till things were finished, you know, as kids.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talked about like in your freshman year. So when you, did you know that you were trying to get a full ride? Like, was the goal just to be a better athlete? And so that was the push for you. And you said you worked really hard. Like, what was the goal for you at that time?
Well, as I got recruited to go wrestle, the head coach was Teague Moore, who's actually now the head coach at American University. You know, and him and I are still unbelievably close friends, and you know, I got to know him well, built a great relationship with him, and he saw in me potential beyond maybe I saw within myself. You know, we set our goals on being a national champ, we set our goals on being, you know, an All-American at this Division I level, and once, you know, he believed in me, and once he's, you know, talked to me about, you know, tapping into that next level, then, you know, I'm full throttle for
it. Yeah.
You know, that's like that goal, that's that task that I got to go get done.
Right.
And, you know, it's not going to come easy to be a national, it's not going to come easy to be an All-American, but that's the goal that, you know, my coach had set for me, and I didn't want to stop until I was there. So seeing the progression and where I was able to, you know, go, came, you know, really took priority.
You know, it's interesting. It's come up before and in a different context, but having someone that believes in you, and it really goes back to the, you teaching Luke, right? So like, I feel like everyone needs a person, right? And sometimes it's your parents. A lot of times it's not your parents, right? It's someone outside of that sphere that you value and respect. And once they respect you, then it gives you all this like mojo that you can like do anything. And it's so funny for me, I worked forever in corporate human resources for really big organizations, and I spent the least amount of time at Amazon, which is the last place I worked. And I met a woman there who was also like newly at Amazon, had had a similar trajectory as me, very bright, super accomplished. And honestly, she's probably the first person in my entire career that was like showing me opportunities and ways that I could exist in the corporate space and beyond that nobody had ever done for me before. And I'm 48, right? So it does. It's kind of strange how like it doesn't matter when it happens, but if you have that person that you just need that little voice that says you can do it, and then if you've got the hard work that's going to back it up, then like it's limitless.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, growing up, we had, you know, we're all very close in age. There's six of us in like 7 years is our span. So, you know, who are my motivators? Who are the people I looked up to? Obviously my family. You know,
right.
I've got three older brothers and two older sisters that, you know, the things that they were accomplishing, you know.
Didn't want to be left behind.
Yeah, I didn't want to be left behind. So
yeah.
I want to stay up with them. So, you know, I was always seeing what they were accomplishing, and that's my motivation. They were my, you know, kind of my inspiration, along with obviously my parents. But then, you know, you do go off to college and, you know, you don't have your brothers and sisters there. You don't have your mother and father there. Yeah, you can talk to them, but, you know, where are they at as far as, you know, they're not at Clarion University. So, you know, with the Teague Moore being placed as the head coach and with him, he kind of ended up filling that void and being that
right.
person, as you were talking about, that was that person who believed, but was that person that, you know, allowed me to just continue to be successful.
So I'm sure there's so many stories that you could share from this perspective of setbacks, but I'm a huge believer that you learn the most and grow the most and really can kind of change the course of your life by your failures and by your setbacks. So can you tell me, or are there times that either in college or post-college where you had some setbacks that really challenged your direction or challenged even your motivation? Anything like that?
I was just, the first one that popped out of my mind was, you know, after my freshman years, right at the end of the season, at our big conference tournament, you know, right before nationals, I was wrestling, and I ended up wrestling pretty good, and I ended up tearing my ACL. I tore my
during the match.
During the match, yeah, and basically. Season was
ow.
Clean, even though it was the last term before nationals, that I wasn't going to be able to go to nationals. So, you know, with all those goals that I mentioned earlier, and
yeah.
the vision that my coach had for me and myself, and what we put in for, you know, 5 months prior to, kind of taken away. And so, after tearing my ACL at the end of that, or during that match, you know, that was a pretty big setback. And if anyone knows about ACL, they're not a quick injury to get over.
Yeah.
They're a half a year. They're an 8 months type of thing to get back into. So, you know, that was a pretty big setback, you know, and I had obviously goals over the summer and going to different tournaments to just continue to excel and get better and, you know, progress through, you know, where I wanted to go. But obviously that's a huge setback. Wasn't going to be able to compete. Wasn't going to be able to, you know, train over the summer and get that off season that, you know, is so important. So I would say that was one of the biggest setbacks physically, but also, you know, it plays a big toll on your emotions.
Right.
And you know, what you're thinking about, what, you know, you want to accomplish. So obviously with the love, the support of family and Coach Moore, being able to, you know, come back from that injury and could come back from that kind of deficit and, you know, get better. But then, mm-hmm. you know, you got to, I mean, now you got to go double time to kind of get caught back up from the time that you missed. But fortunately, I was able to get over that and get healthy and, you know, end up having a very successful college career in the sport of wrestling.
And then what happens as you're about to leave school? When did you know you wanted to teach? Was that, you're a coach too, so we'll talk about that. But like, as you're kind of, I think this is, so this podcast, hopefully there's young adults that are listening or people that are actually kind of just now looking at what they want to do post-school and really trying to understand what opportunities are available. My big premise for this is that there's a lot of ways you can end up in your life in terms of jobs and roles, and you can navigate that. There's so many different ways. It's not a straight line. So I'm curious. I'm fascinated by people and how they get to where their goal is, you know, and sometimes it's straight line, sometimes it's not. So when did you start to think about, and did you want to be a professional wrestler, you know, all of that? So,
I'm glad you asked that question, because I've been asked that question, like, well, how did you want to become a teacher? And I'm going to give, I guess, a shout out to my 11th grade teacher. His name's Mr. Manchester. There was a class called Kids of Kids. And again, I guess going back to my personality, like I could fit in with all different groups. You know, I didn't take band or anything like that, but I could, you know, be friends with, you know, band kids and so on. So there's a class called, there's an elective called Kids of Kids. And I used to take, you know, the sports classes, the basketball classes, the team sports classes. And it was time for, you know, to pick the electives, and I was like, I'm going to try this Kids of Kids class. I don't know, I'll give it a try, whatever, be open-minded.
This was in college, or this is in high
school? This is in high school.
Okay.
11th grade in high school.
Okay, 11th grade, sorry.
Kids of Kids, and basically what Kids of Kids was these high schoolers, we put on puppet shows at local elementary schools, and it was talking to kids about drugs, alcohol, making right decisions, saying no, just like high schoolers coming into elementary school classrooms and just, you know, being a different person than the teacher coming in. So Mr. Manchester was the teacher of this class, and I went in and I was like, you know, I'll be open-minded. I'll give it a try. I don't know what it is. And it was the moment that I stepped into my the elementary school class, was like, and did a puppet show, and the kids' reactions, I was like, dude, that was awesome. Like, it was so cool to see their reaction. It was fun. And I didn't really think any of it. We did, you know, went to a couple other elementary schools, did a couple more things. And then at the end of the class, at the end of the quarter, I remember Mr. Manchester coming up to me. He's like, hey, what are you thinking about doing when you graduate? I was like, I don't know, wrestle. I was like, that's my main goal. I want to wrestle when I go to college. Like, that's my really focus. Like, well, wrestling's not a major, but teaching is. And I was like, I don't know, be a teacher. He goes, well, I've been teaching for 20 years. He goes, and I've never seen someone connect with students the way that you have, naturally. He goes, you step into a classroom, kids automatically, like, come to you, and they just, they light up. He goes, you have no teaching experience. He goes, but you just naturally are able to, you know, just connect with kids just like that. You know them, you understand them, you know, you can joke with them, and they just enjoy it. And I was like, I don't know, I never thought of it. So that was my junior year. I wasn't even thinking about school. I wasn't even thinking about school then, you know. But then came my senior year during graduation. I remember he came and talked to me again. He's like, so, you know, I went to sign with Clarion. He's like, what kind of major did you pick? He's like, hey, you know, I hear you're signing with Clarion. You know, you got a wrestling scholarship. He's like, awesome. He's like, have you declared your major? And I was like, I did. I said, I'm going to give elementary education a try. As I there's nothing else that I'm like necessarily interested in. You know, I like building things, but there wasn't anything with like an engineering, you know, kind of degree with what Clarion was. I said, I am going to give elementary education a try, you know, to see where that takes me. I said, I do really enjoy being in the classroom, seeing the kids' expressions, and it's like, it makes me feel very, like, I can let loose, be energetic and fun, and at the same time, the kids are learning and enjoying, you know, the atmosphere and stuff like that. So, so that's really where, you know, the seed was planted as far as being a teacher.
It's amazing.
And
we all need that person.
In high school. Yeah. In that class, and, you know, it was the really the character trait of being open-minded about, you know, trying something different. You know, being kids of kids, like, I was like, I'd rather go play team sports and, you know, go play, you know, advanced PE and do, I was more drawn to those things. But I was like, yeah, you know, I'll give kids a kid to try, you know, and see, you know, how I like it. And, you know, if it's an elective and if I don't like it, then, you know, I won't take it again. So
I met this kid, I don't know if I've told this story on here before, but I met this kid at Westfields High School. I was doing the scoreboard for a basketball game, which I was totally nervous about because I'm horrible at fast math. So this kid, I was like, you have to tell me exactly what to do. And he was a junior and Luke was about to be a freshman. And I am fascinated, right, by young people and sort of what they're doing and how they're doing it. And so I asked him, you know, what advice would you give to your freshman self? And he was an athlete and he played three sports his freshman year. And he said, you know, I'm a junior now. I'm not big enough to play on the football team anymore. I'm not fast enough to run. Like all these sports that he was in had sort of tapped out for him. And he said, I really wish I had done some different things and sort of diversified, like my word, not his, but like being open to something totally different than maybe what you're used to or that is cool or whatever that is, because you never know what that impact can be.
I would definitely agree with that. Being open-minded about trying something new, like going out there and, you know, I'm not saying well, I've never done this, and go do something that, you know, is pretty ridiculous. But, you know, if the opportunity presents itself that you're kind of like, kind of interested, but, you know, not real sure, give it a try, you know, honestly. And, you know, when you do, give it your all also, though. You know, not just going in, just be like, well, and, you know, call it half-assing it, but, like, giving it your all. That way you can get the most out of it, and you can really enjoy it. So when I, you know, took Kid to Kids, I wasn't a wallflower. I didn't just take that class and like lay back to see how things were at. I was like, hey, I'm going to go and take this class, and I'm going to give it my all in this class and do, you know, be the best person in this class that I can be and make the biggest difference. You know, I'm going to, hey, it's Kid to Kids. It's us kids, you know, interacting with those kids. I'm going to interact the best that I can with these kids. You know, a lot of it came naturally, but at the same time, you know, it was just giving that effort into that new experience, you know, rather than kind of just testing it or just dipping your toe in. My advice is be open-minded about it, but when you do it,
full throttle.
Like,
and that's also your kind of persona, right?
Yeah.
So that's another thing, and actually Missy and I were just talking about this in the car, is that it seems like you, and you can tell me if I'm off or how this has been cultivated in you, but outside looking in, right, at you. It seems like everything you do with intention, right? That there is a very specific focus in what you're accomplishing. And we'll talk about the hurlers. And yeah. I mean, that obviously to me is like a brainchild, right? That you started a long time ago. But also just it seems like even at a junior in high school, right? That you knew enough to be mindful in that experience to give 100%. So is that natural? Maybe that's partly athletics, like where you learn to really visualize and focus and kind of be toward, you get the goal that you're looking for. But how did you, is it natural? Is it something that your parents taught you, like in terms of like you show up and you're just 100% all the time?
So
that intention.
Yeah, I would say it definitely started obviously with my mother and father, and you know, that example that when they would go into something, they gave it their all. And then we'd be in a situation and we'd learn to give it our all. But in the same time, when you do give it your all, and you go and give every max effort, you get the most out of it. And you get the most enjoyment out of it, and you can reap a lot of rewards and the benefits from, you know, the successes rather than just laying back, right? So it's yes, it was built into our culture and into my upbringing with, you know, what my parents instilled. But at the same time, you know, I end up doing it without having my parents to remind me of it, because I would go into a situation without them telling me to go into that situation, and it came naturally. But then I would also get the best results, you know, and I would also get the, you know, the best lessons out of by doing. So once that was instilled in me, then it just kept snowballing in the right direction. That's kind of just like how I go about it now.
Are you like, would you characterize yourself as an introspective person? Like, are you someone that sort of thinks about how you're going to go into a situation, or if like you talked about the setback with being hurt, or like, are you able to kind of look inside and be like, oh, I wanted to show up in a different way? Are you, or is it more just directly like, here's the goal, this is what I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to show up?
Remember I told you I was in special ed and I didn't know very good vocabulary. What does introspective mean? I'm still not very good at reading or writing.
Yes.
And I tell you what, whenever there's vocabulary words, I usually write them down. There's a lot of words that the people say, I'm like, that sounds good. I'll try to say that and sound smart.
So introspective means like you're able to look inside yourself and feel and understand what motivated you, or you understand that, like, you know what, I kind of could have done that differently, and so I'm going to change that approach next time. Like, I think introspection means you're able to see yourself objectively, not just like you're just doing, but you're like taking a moment and you're reflecting on your behavior and how you engage in something.
I think I go into the situation, pretty much every situation, that full throttle, the best energy, the most focus, and to try to maximize whatever it is to get the best out of it. And then, however things go, then I can look back and say, all right, hey, what would I change different? Hey, if I remember in that situation again, this is what I'm going to improve, right? This is what I'm going to change about it. It might not be the energy, but it might just be the approach. So I usually go into situations, you know, with that full throttle mentality, with that, it's going to be the maximized, you know, focus and energy. And if it doesn't turn out right, well, then you know what? Maybe there's a next
regroup.
Time or not, and regroup and then and change things up. But, you know, I'm not one to just dip the toe in or just kind of like, hey, how's things going? I'm just going to go in for it and, you know, hopefully.
And the other thing that I think we didn't talk about, but and it's hard for you to say because it's you, but I would say that people can read when people aren't authentic. And I would say being around you, your energy and your whole vibe is very genuine and authentic. There's people I think that try to act like you do, but it's not like true to their spirit. Right? So it has to be like, right? It has to be genuine to who you are. And that's something that you recognize was the strength of yours.
Yeah.
And then how do you capitalize? Like the biggest thing I think for people and as early as high school is start to think about where your strengths are, right? Yeah. Like you were in the Kids of Kids and someone said to you, you're really good at this. So like, oh, that wasn't a concern for you at the time,
right?
But now you have an option that you didn't have before. So being open to where your strengths are and how you show up, I think is important.
I think that's extremely important, you know, focusing on their strengths and then kind of harnessing what those can do for you.
Right.
You know? I naturally have a lot of energy. I naturally am
great with people.
Great with people. You know, where does that lead me? That can lead you to a lot of different career areas, but ultimately, you know, I think I'm in the absolute best profession that I can be in. Yeah. You need to have a lot of energy with kids, especially 9, 10-year-olds. Yeah. And, you know, you've got to be able to build relationships with them. And I really feel like my personality and the character traits and those strengths that I have really fit well with teaching and that
occupation. So in terms of wrestling and college and sort of leaving that behind, did you know, was there any chance of you wrestling professionally? Or is it like, I know you want to coach. Like, give me a little bit of a feeling of like how you, when you're nearing the end of school and you got to get a master's, right, for your in education. So tell me a little bit about that time frame.
Actually, one of my biggest goals, actually, I was like, and one of the dream jobs, actually, I think it would be great to be a, you know, once I wanted to be a teacher and high school coach. Like, obviously, wrestling was always going to be in my life. It didn't matter if I was going to continue it or whether I was going to be coaching it. It was going to, it's been such a big part of my life since I was 3. And all the way through the elementary, middle school, high school, and obviously into college. I said, no matter where I go, if I continue with wrestling, you know, I tried out for the U.S. Open. I tried, you know. But the U.S. Open is more, it's freestyle, and collegiate is folk style. So there's just different rules with that style of wrestling. And I didn't do much freestyle growing up. That was all folk style, which is what most people are used to, I guess, in this country. But the Olympics and stuff like that's freestyle. So I wasn't the greatest at freestyle. So going past college and competing, you know, for the U.S. team wasn't going to be in my vision, even though... You know, it'd be great, but you know,
just wasn't in the cards.
Wasn't in the cards exactly. But how was I gonna keep wrestling my life? I was gonna keep competing in open tournaments like I do. I said, but I'm going the path of coaching it. You know, and I could talk a little bit about the coaching aspect of it and what I've learned with coaching. You know, there's people like, well, why do you coach? You know, what got you into coaching? I was like, well, at first it was what wrestling has done for me. What the whole sport and the mentality and the physical mental strength that you need to endure to be successful at. And that was really kind of like where I first started. Like I was like that because of that. But it really has transitioned within the last year or two, and it's not what it's done for me. It's more the focus of the kids, like what their goals and aspirations are for the sport and what they want to accomplish in their life. And I kind of really try to see what they want to do and then help them with that. And use wrestling as that tool and use wrestling as that guide to get them to where they want to be, not to where myself and what wrestling's done for me. I want to be able to work with them and what they want and how wrestling can help them with that. So.
And do you feel, I don't want to ask a yes or no question, but maybe it's a yes or no and then a follow-up. But like, do you feel like in the sport of wrestling, and as a coach, there are lots of life lessons you can learn in that space, right? So I think the cool thing about sports and even the arts and any other kind of area of interest, there's opportunities for you to learn life lessons or to learn to mature and grow. So part of your role as a coach is to help identify that, I would think, for people and then help them, you know, work through that and lead through that. So what's that been like for you?
Life lessons, I can go on and on about life lessons and what wrestling has done
and what lessons it's taught me. But, you know, I kind of, when I talk to the kids coming out for the for wrestling, I was like, you know what? Wrestling doesn't take things that take, I guess, like what other sports take skill. Like, you know, if you're going to be a football player, you got to be able to catch a ball. Like, you got to have that hand-eye coordination. Or you got to play basketball, you got to be able to have a good handle. Like, wrestling doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily have to come in with a whole lot of skills in your tool bag. What makes you successful in wrestling are things that require really no talent. It's, you know, hard work. They don't really take talent, determination, and you know, perseverance. Some of those characteristics, doesn't take talent, doesn't take that natural athleticism. It's just going to take more of a mindset in within that sport.
And isn't it so, I don't know as much about wrestling. My husband played a lot of sports, and he has such respect for wrestlers because of the mental sort of acuity, if that's the right word, or the mental, like, you just need to...
Acuity is a nice word.
Yeah, yeah. I'm 2 for 2 now on my word count. See, I am a word person. Yeah. I wasn't so good at the other stuff.
I'm not
going
to play just words with my
word. But, like, he would say that is a phenomenal, like, to be able to, you're one-on-one, and there's such mental strength in thinking, like, that has to be first, right? Like, I can win this first. Yeah. If you don't think that, then... And then what you're talking about, obviously, you know way better than I do. But I'm curious, like, to be able to coach people through that and teach them how to think that way, that's such a gift for other things that you want to do down the road, right?
It is a challenge, because it's like, how do you... I can teach a technique. I can teach a single leg. I can show you what position you have to be in. I can show you, you know, how to pin somebody and what body motion, like the different wrestling moves. Like, you teach that, you show that, they practice it. You know, it's like, well, how do you teach the character trait of, you know, hard work or determination or, you know, sacrifice, commitment? Like, it is. Like, how do you teach that? It's, you know, leading by example. It's, you know, having those conversations, and it's about building those relationships with your kids so that they trust in the process that you're putting them through and what you're doing.
When they lose, I mean, like you said before, there's nobody else to blame.
Right.
So that I would think if you win or you lose, equal amounts of despair and joy, right? Because you get a ton of confidence, I'm thinking, from winning, because it's individual and you're like, I did it.
Yep.
And then when you lose, it's probably humiliating. And it's a lot of, like, I would liken it to, like, rejection. Like, you know, you're just kind of humiliated, right, in that moment. And I don't know that there are other sports that are like that, really, where it's just that in your face in terms of...
There's not a whole lot of sports like wrestling that has that, that in your face, and almost like, that absolutely, you know, that glorified feeling when, you know, your hand's being raised because of you.
Right,
or, you know, you're out there by yourself. Yeah, and it can be... Some people take it as embarrassing. You know, I always took a loss as though as more fuel. My mindset was not as embarrassing.
Yeah.
It was, hey, that's another, that, hey, I'll tell you what, whatever that kid has done in the room or outside of the room, you know, he's put in more work than I have. Okay.
Wow.
That just gave me fuel to kind of get
attitude.
Back. Yeah. It is an attitude's another character.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, you know, taught. It's kind of be that upbringing kind of thing.
And then how long till you got that job? Because so you said that was a dream. And you're really still quite young. So that's pretty cool to realize one of your life dreams so early, right? So how quickly did that happen for you?
Well, how I got hired in Fairfax County was definitely unconventional. After college, I moved down this way. And usually you go through the county and you put in all your, you know, your application through HR, human resources, and, you know, they go out and they send it out to schools, and, you know, schools contact you. Kind of, there's a process really with it in Fairfax County. I just kind of did the old fashioned way. I had a resume and I just walked around the schools in the summer. I went to about 100 schools in the county.
That's,
and I just walked in the summer and I said, hey, my name's Hadley Harris and I just graduated college with a teaching degree. I'm looking to teach anywhere at an elementary school. If you can give me the opportunity to talk to somebody, it'd be great. And, like, that again, that was just kind of that, hey, if you put me in front of somebody, I can build a relationship with them, and I can get, you know, the principal, the assistant principal, to be like, wow, this person's really passionate about it.
Right.
You know, and I can connect with them. So I went to a bunch of schools in the county. I'd wake up in the morning, I'd put a few schools in my GPS and be like, I'm going to this one. I walk in, talk to either a secretary, maybe even a janitor, I don't know, and walk out, and then I'm like, all right, what's the next school on my GPS? All right, I'm going to go to this one. So I went around the county, you know, a few times in August, right towards the end of summer, and end up having quite a few sit-down interviews and quite a few, you know, phone calls back saying, hey, we want to hire you, we want to hire you. And ultimately, I ended up choosing Union Mill. It felt right. I really liked the staff that I was going to work with. And then there was a family that was, their kids were going there. It was a wrestling connection.
Uh-huh.
I wrestled at Clarion University. The father wrestled at Clarion University, who lives down here. And
always
so
helps.
Yeah, it always helps. So I was like, hey, that was kind of a, you know, kind of a bump that way. That hey, you know, I'm going to be at a school that I know someone in there. You know, not that I can't build a relationship with the kids
right.
that aren't there, but hey, I was like, hey, there's somebody that I know, I like the area, kind of thing. So you know, I end up choosing Union Mill.
So one thing I just want to comment on that, like your boldness to go and talk to these schools. So one of the things that I'm passionate about now is helping to develop these skills in kids now, right? And young people to say, it's okay to go up and be proactive and it's okay to be assertive in this kind of way, right? Like I'm passionate about this and this is something I want to pursue and not just hiding behind technology.
Yeah.
And so this idea that like, you're able to put yourself out there, and that's a risk every time. You don't know what's going to happen.
Sure.
But this, like, I love it, and I think I've heard it again, reference to sports. But it's this idea of like amnesia, and I kind of have this too, and I don't know why. But like, I can be horribly humiliated, and like the next day, just be like, well, today's a new day, and exactly. I'm going to try something new. So the fact that like, I don't know, like, there's conventional ways of doing things, but you were like, here's this whole system, but I'm going to do it this way, mm-hmm. and then you still got the outcome you were looking for.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think the best way of, you know, interacting with somebody is go and interact and not give them a piece, not get a resume sent to you by email.
Right.
And like, who's this? I mean, Hadley, that's a girl's name. They might think I was even a girl, you know?
Right.
You know, they, or, you know, they look at, you know, how I'm not the best writer, you know that. And so on my resume, I probably had words misspelled, and I probably had, it wasn't the right MLA format or whatever you do on a resume. And so I was like, you know, I don't want to be judged on a piece of paper and what my accolades are. You know, if you're going to judge me on the way that I interact with somebody, because I think that's more important than, you know, what someone had down on a piece of paper.
So you get the job there, and then how soon after that are you coaching in high school? Are you coaching in other ways, or is that
as soon as I graduated and got hired at Union Mill, I was a very quick turnaround. I got kind of hired in like August, like 23rd. School started like August 27th or 8th or something like that. All my stuff was still packed up from college. It was actually still in a trailer, like enclosed trailer. So I drove back up home 6 hours up north to Erie, Pennsylvania, where McCain. Hooked up trailer to truck, came back down. I lived with that family member that I talked mm-hmm. about earlier. I lived in their barn for a little bit with my stuff until I was able to find an apartment in the area. So first, you know, a few months were a little bit rocky, but, you know, I knew I was where I wanted to be. And then right away, I got in contact with Brian Hazard, who was the head coach at Robinson High School wrestling over there. So, and that contact came from my head coach at Clarion, Teague Moore. Knew Brian Hazard, and so we got in contact, and I was going to be in the Centerville area, which isn't very far from Robinson, so that was a pretty quick transition. I didn't care what school I coached
right.
at. I didn't care where I was going to get myself in the room, you know, no matter what. I didn't really need paid or anything like that. I just wanted to be in the room working with wrestlers. So, you know, as soon as I got hired teaching fourth grade, I, you know, it wasn't very difficult, but it came really quick to get into a wrestling room. Yeah.
So you just said something that I think is so important to highlight, which you said, I just want to get in the room and I didn't even need to be paid. Right. So I think this is another thing that is such a great life lesson, that when you can be around an area of interest, or you can be around people that are considered experts in their field, or you can be around people that are more advanced in something that you are interested in, it's okay to be an observer and to participate without getting something in return at first, right? That you are just soaking, what's being paid to you in return is that you're getting knowledge that you eventually can use. So the fact that you had that mentality of like, I just want to be around it and mm-hmm. do as much as I can, I think serves you really well.
Yeah.
Do you think that also helped in terms of you getting spots and getting people to take?
I definitely think, as far as, you know, You know, I look at the impact that I can make. I don't ever look at the dollar signs. I just not, never have been in, you know, again, my upbringing.
Right.
You know, I get the shirt off my back if someone needs help. You see someone on the side of the road and they've got a flat tire, you know, and they're looking like, hey, I'm stopping, I'm helping them out. Like, it just, you know, it's if it's something that I feel like I can do, then why not, you know,
right,
be that person you can help. So, yeah, so it's all for me, the focus is always on the person on the other end.
Yeah.
It's always been, you know, what can I do to help this group out? What can I do to help this person out? What can I do to, you know, so that this person benefits from what I'm helping them out with or what I'm trying to instruct them with? Because ultimately, what drives me is seeing them succeed, you know?
Yep. All right, so I have a couple more questions, and I don't want to keep you that much longer. So
Thank goodness.
We're going to jump to Hurricane Hurlers because I want to talk about that experience, mm-hmm, how you came up with that, what your vision of that was, and as someone who personally was able to take part in it and like have my kids be a part of it and thoroughly enjoy it, thank you.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Sure.
But tell me a little bit about how that idea came about and when that was a move, obviously, from Robinson to a different school. Yeah.
So there's a few factors of when I started it, and you know, it's always been, even since I've moved down here, you know, but when I moved down here and got the job for teaching, like, I started to feel out what wrestling was like in Virginia. And started to say, Virginia wrestling is nothing like Pennsylvania wrestling.
Really?
And,
yeah.
And I don't know if it ever will. There won't be a state that trumps Pennsylvania wrestling. Pennsylvania wrestling is just, I mean, it's just a next level of toughness and just, I don't know. But I think part of it is when I came down, there weren't any clubs, there weren't any youth programs.
Yeah, so I, coming from Pennsylvania and, you know, the talent and the level of, I guess, competition in PA, coming down and coaching in Virginia, you know, it was below what I guess I was used
you were,
to.
Yeah.
And one thing that I recognized was that, you know, a lot of the high schoolers, or I guess their high school wrestlers, were starting off in 7th and 8th grade, or they're starting off as a freshman, first-year wrestlers. I'm like, why aren't some of these kids starting off in the elementary level? And there really wasn't, I ended up finding out, there really aren't a whole lot of club programs, or there wasn't really a lot of...
Like a feeder,
yeah, like
right?
A feeder pro for wrestling, all right, in the town. I'm like, well, that's a huge difference for, you know, the competition level and the talent that kind of, you know, could spurs from starting young. And so that's always been my vision to start up a program and things like that. And so I finally pulled the trigger on that, and obviously everything that I pulled the trigger on, I go full force. So I started up the Hurricane Hurlers about 4 years now. I've been doing it, and basically it's at Union Mill, or pulling from Union Mill, the school I teach at, anywhere from, you know, first grade, kindergarten, all the way up through sixth grade, like, and getting the kids exposed to it in the way that I was exposed to it, in the way that, you know, I enjoyed it. So, you know, a lot of, I guess, my mentality when I go into a sport's like, you gotta make it fun, but you can't make it too fun that, you know, they're not learning what wrestling is. So, we play a lot of games. We learn a little bit of wrestling, and then there's always that conversation piece about what we did today that will be impactful for them the next day and so on. So I started that, the Hurricane Hurlers, again a few years back, and you know,
the first time you did it,
yeah,
you did it for free, right?
Yeah, well, I still do it
for free. Still do it for free.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, though, you do camps.
Yeah,
and you...
so I do a camp in the summer then. Yeah, I do a camp in the summer. That's a week long. It's about 4 hours long a day. And it's a little bit more intense. And it's again, it's building upon, all right, so they've been with the Hurlers Club for, you know, a few years. You know, they're starting to understand what wrestling is.
Right.
Now, let's go ahead and turn up a little bit and really start to have them feel what wrestling is, as far as a little bit of the physical part, a little bit of the mental part, as far as, hey, you know, it's got to be a grind, it's going to be tough, because wrestling is tough. If you play games the whole time and you only joke and laugh about it the whole time,
right,
then when you go out in there and wrestle somebody and you lose, then that's when that embarrassing part comes.
And mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, well, it's not fun to lose. I'm like, yeah, it's not fun to lose, but we got to make sure that, you know, we build.
You're built for it.
Yeah, built for it. So, yes, we want to hook you in the right way. We want you to enjoy it. I don't want to kick anyone out of the wrestling room. So we're going to have fun. I want you to enjoy wrestling and not just, you know, right out of the gate, go ahead, we're going to start, you know, not like it. So the club is for them, you know, those first time wrestlers, those younger wrestlers. I want to try, we'll see what it is, what's it about. And then, you know, we build upon that in the summer where they're staying a little bit longer, working a little bit harder, doing more physical, mental, you know, challenging things. And it just builds on that character and that culture that, again, hopefully as they keep going, actually this next wrestling season coming up will be my first wave of the hurlers that will come through that I started up.
That's so a lot of patience.
Yeah, so they started in fourth grade, and now they'll be in ninth grade next year. And so I'm pretty excited to see some of those boys come through that, you know, we started a few years back. And then after that, it's going to hopefully it'll be a consistent, you know, gateway for,
right,
you know, I'll have a constant upbringing of kids that started wrestling at that young, and they have an idea of what wrestling is, and that,
and they know you, and right?
That,
and they,
there's that relationship piece,
yep,
that's already, that gap's already been bridged, and you know that's already been started. Rather than, you know, and I never discourage anyone if they're a freshman or sophomore, like, hey, I've been wrestling before, can I come out for it? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
like, you know, but you know, it might be something unusual that you're not used to. So,
right.
I don't ever discourage someone if they've never done it before not to come out for it or try it. But yeah, so that's where Hurler started with, and you know, I love doing it, and
it's funny. I'm sure, I don't know if you know this or not, but like as parents, it sort of got, you know, there's a lot of people that were talking about it, and they're like, it's free? Why is it free? Like, we should totally pay. So you should totally make people pay. And I know that you're like, do it for the love of it and for the love of kids, which is amazing. But I think it's such a great non-threatening way, right, to expose people to it and then to give them some exposure. And you're right. I mean, I don't, again, like soccer, football, you know, there's other sports here, like that, you know, generally growing up here, like, mm-hmm, you know, those were the sports that you played, right? So the fact that you've kind of cracked the code on that, I think, is really cool.
Yeah.
All right. So just really quick, because I want to talk a little bit about teaching again. And because you are so, I, at least from my perspective, I feel like you're so creative and innovative about how you approach the classroom and how kids learn in your class. So that's just my perspective. Is that something that's intentional on your part? Would you say that's true?
Intentional? I don't know. I think it comes natural, really. I mean, again, I go back to Mr. Manchester saying, you know, just like the way that you interact with kids, like, I don't really ever have a lesson plan kind of going into it or a situation. I mean, I have an idea of the direction, but again, it's about how the students are reacting and being able to read them as far as what they, you know, what they need help with or what they're getting,
mm-hmm,
and then feeding off of that, and, you know, and really getting to know a child and my students is really what really guides what I'm doing. So, you know, I don't intentionally go in there with, hey, this is exactly what I'm going to do, exactly like this, because when you're teaching, you know, 20, 30, fourth graders, they're going to throw a wrench into your plan of, it's going to go like this, it's going to go like this, it's going to go like this, it never goes like this, it never goes like this. And so, I, with my personality, it fits, again, it fits very well with teaching, because I'm able to, you know, to roll with the situation and maximize, again, you know, the benefit of the students.
All right. And then also, how do you handle, because this area is, I think, pretty competitive in terms of, I'm just being a parent myself and seeing sort of how intense parents can be, right? And how, and I remember I sat down with one of my kids at their kindergarten conference. And I could tell that the teacher was like visibly uncomfortable and nervous sitting down with me. And I was like, oh no, here we go. Did he do something wrong? She's like, well, he scored very high on his whatever test they take at the end of the year or mid-year. I think this was mid-year or the fall. I don't know. And I was like, okay. And she's like, we have all these things that like he can work on. And I could tell after I left that meeting that she was really worried about my reaction to where he fell in the spectrum and are they doing enough? Like she was anticipating that. And that was early on for me. And my kid's like my second kid. And I was like, oh, so parents.
Parent question. Huh?
I know. So anyway, I just realized that she, that parents, I'm sure, can be a challenge. So just generally speaking, right, what's been your approach to, what have you found successful, I should say? Because it's hard, right? You're not only managing the kids, and that's your job, but then you have parents that you have to, quote-unquote, answer to as well as an administration, right? So how do you balance all of that?
Just in general, I would say as far as when it comes to, you know, students and the parents, like, I haven't had very many or if very few, I guess, complications with parents.
Yeah.
I guess I want to say with my trick is, you know, open communication, letting them just know what pretty much what's going on in classroom, what's going on with, you know, their student or their son or daughter, and, you know, making sure that they know that their child is getting the absolutely most attention, focus, and my intentions are 100% genuine and, you know, in the right direction. And, you know, I want the kid to be successful, and I'm going to provide every, you know, support that I can give them. And really building a relationship with their son or daughter is really a huge focus, at least in the first part of the year.
Right.
You know, it's,
right.
You know, when it comes to the academic parts, yeah, it's super important, but, you know, what's going to allow them to be successful as people? Like, you know, being able to communicate and collaborate to one another, being able to
play
with each other, being able to trust one another, being able to, you know, be a good classmate. And so I spent a lot of focus with those aspects in my classroom right off the bat for the first month or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like by doing that, it really builds a good foundation for really the remainder of the year. You know, the kids really trust in what I'm doing. They really trust in what what I value, and really kind of can see what I want for them in the year. So by doing that, I don't get a whole lot of backlash from parents.
Yeah.
You know, another trick that I love going and supporting my students outside of school. You know,
yes.
They got a soccer game, I'm there. They got a football game. They got a, you know, piano recital.
And you're quite the cheerer. You're quite, yes. So he's quite audible when he shows up.
I like to go and see them
yeah.
doing things that are in the classroom setting, you know. And again, by doing that, it builds that trust with the student. And
probably parents see that, yeah.
That trust with the parents, and, you know, that genuine, like, man, he really cares about what's going on in my child's life. So, you know, by doing those little extra things and by going out of your way and just providing that little extra, you know, that support, I think it goes a long way for both the student and the parent that, you know, you don't necessarily have to deal with a whole lot of that backlash from it. Now, there's situations, you know, behaviors, things that happen.
Sure.
But, you know, once you have that good relationship and that foundation with the family, then, you know, those things usually iron themselves out with a good conversation.
And given that you are very good at relationships anyway, right? Like, that is one of your strengths that you can kind of probably flex to different people and figure that out. That's probably served you well, I would think. And then what about, and I don't know if it's as much of an issue in fourth grade or not, but in terms of the curriculum you'd like to teach or things that you'd like to do versus obviously there's like mandated curriculum that everybody has to cover and things have, you know, I don't know if dramatic is the word, but they've certainly changed over the last 5 or 7 years about what is expected. So how do you feel about those changes? Is it something that's frustrating to you, or is it something that you can work within given, you know, the style that you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, I embrace the changes. You know, I mean, I still, obviously you have a curriculum, you have a guideline, you know. I kind of waver sometimes outside of that guideline. They don't have to tell you how you got to teach it. They just tell you you got to teach it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So obviously with my personality, my style is a lot different than maybe some of the other the teachers, you know. Particular subject, I love teaching math. I think there's a lot more things you could do with math. I've always been more of a numbers person anyways. I love competition when it comes to that. I think competition can forge good character.
Right.
You learn to win humbly, but you learn to lose with respect. Subjects that I don't necessarily like, reading and writing, literacy, you know, but, you know, that derives from not being very successful as a child with it in any ways and not being able to really hook into that literacy part. But I know the importance of it, and so I share that.
I think you make that really fun for them. I mean, that's what helped. That's, again, where I think Luke identified with you in that way, and I think it's great that they see you as human, right? That you're relatable.
Yeah, I share that experience with them about you know struggling with the literacy part and the reading and writing growing up. I said, but ultimately, like, here I am as a teacher, you know, doing it. I said, you know, and I can tell you from experience, why it's important and why, you know, we need to focus on these certain things, and let's focus on them in the right way. Let's jump into it in the right way, and let's try to get you hooked on something. Let's try to get you interested in something so then you can grab on that thing and,
right,
and go in that right direction with it. So, yeah, as far as the curriculum and what we got to teach, you know, those are some of the things that I more tend to gravitate towards and a little bit more successful with. But at the same time, whether I'm teaching math, whether I'm teaching language arts, science, social studies, I give it my all, and I don't try to let the kids see the difference between what I like and what I don't.
Right.
I just say, hey, I love it all.
Right.
You know, and give it that all, give it my all.
All right, I have two more questions. The first is, about your, and this is going to be a hard question, so, but like, because it's, I think, hard for anyone to answer, but when you think about your role as a teacher, what are some of the things that you hope your legacy is, right? When you think about your impact, or when you have taught for the next however long you want to do this, right? What are some of the things for you that you hope that you leave behind?
That my passion for it, for kids, my passion for, you know, being a role model and being an influence was always 100%. And that, I don't want to say there wasn't a dull moment, but like, I, you know, every day was a new day to even do better. Like, no matter what was happening, you know, outside of school, whether there might be complications or downsets, like, I didn't bring that into the classroom. So if there's, you know, some struggles going on in family life or something, that I didn't let that affect, you know, my instruction, or didn't let that affect how I approached how I taught. Like, I was able to block that out and give absolute focus to the students. So I guess passion, and
yep,
like what love I had for what I did. And I always tell people, they're like, oh, you're going to teach for the rest of your life? I said, most likely. I said, if I lose that passion and that spark and that absolute love for it, I said, I would never want to deprive a kid of that. I don't want to deprive a kid of a good education. I don't want to deprive a kid of, you know, I'm not giving it my all. And I'd find something else. I would maybe target something else. But, you know, I've been teaching now for 8 years, and, you know,
yeah,
the flame's still
burning hot.
It's still burning hot. Hotter each year, so.
All right. And then the other question, it may be similar, but, like, what advice do you have to young people that may be pursuing a career in education, and just other, like, sort of success factors, which I think you've talked about a little bit already, but what are two or three things that you think translate as they're evolving and, you know, leaving that kind of college environment, or as they're approaching college? Like, what are some of the critical success factors that you think would help people?
I touch on a few. Obviously, it's that relationship. It's really the building the relationship with every student, not just the ones that you think can be successful or the ones that do stand out. It's about how many students you have. You have 23. All right, well, then you're going to give 23 of those students your absolute focus and your absolute best, you know, character. So always go into that situation wanting to do the best for every kid or every student that you have. Energy for teaching.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta make it interesting. You gotta make it energetic. They're kids. They're, you know, you gotta kind of put yourself back into that child mentality, that they gotta move around. They've gotta be excited about school. So what are you gonna do to make that difference? What are you gonna do to make that change? So that passion, that relationship, and that energy is really important, at least at the elementary level. I think,
right,
you know, that once they get older, there's different things that, you know, tailored to, you know, the development or the maturity of kids. But, you know, you're at that elementary level. You've got to make it so that, you know, they are involved and engaged and encouraged the best that they can.
Well, the world needs more Hadley Harrisons, that is for sure. We would be a better place. So hopefully, if anyone's listening to this too, just in terms of a career in teaching or thinking about helping out in education, I think it's such a great and fulfilling career, and that can leave you. My husband's dad was a teacher and a coach in high school, and he passed away not that long ago, but the impact and the legacy of that was just phenomenal in terms of people showing up. So I know we started this with me telling you what an impact you've made for us personally, but hopefully you get a feeling and a sense of over the last 8 years how many people you've impacted, I'm sure, in a super positive way. But thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Teresa. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Hadley. I feel like I could run a marathon after this conversation. Hadley's enthusiasm and energy is so contagious. A special thanks to Missy, the producer of this episode. If you like this discussion, please subscribe and rate Relatable on iTunes and follow us on Twitter.